Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
Several senior members of Congress are up in arms over media reports that the current NSA director's job is in jeopardy. Among them, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who's called Defense Secretary Ash Carter and National Intelligence Director James Clapper to testify about why they reportedly recommended the removal of Admiral Mike Rogers. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about this dust-up in this week's edition of Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook, and he joins me now. And this is particularly badly timed, I guess, Jared, because Mike Rogers is talking to Donald Trump about a job, and Trump is getting advice from Chairman Devin Nunes of the committee.
Yeah, that's right. So Nunes is part of the Trump transition team. And as you indicated, Admiral Rogers reportedly met late last week with Mr. Trump at Trump Tower in New York about reportedly a potential job, possibly the director of national intelligence. We believe he is in the running for that position in the Trump administration. And we should say the Obama administration has really not said anything about this publicly, this being the potential firing of Admiral Rogers. But someone in the administration did choose to leak this news first to The Washington Post, right after reports of that meeting. And the news is, evidently, that both Clapper and Carter recommended to the president that Rogers be removed about a month ago as director of NSA and commander of U.S. Cyber Command. Obviously, that was long before the election, so this removal recommendation wouldn't have been tied in any way to Mr. Trump's election. What administration folks have been saying in these leaks to the Post and to the New York Times is that there are several issues at play, including reportedly, you know, dissatisfaction with the way the offensive cyber war has been playing out against ISIS, issues surrounding the whole debate about whether it's time to separate NSA and Cyber Command and give them separate leaders. And Rogers himself was asked about this on Sunday during a security conference in Halifax during one of the Q&A sessions. Things got rather testy, and we have a clip from that exchange. This is Rogers being asked a question by Josh Rogan, who works for The Washington Post and CNN.
Yesterday, The Washington Post, a very well-respected independent
newspaper. If I could, let me cut to the chase.
No, I'm going to finish the question before you.
Let me finish the question. Let me cut to the chase, if I could, because I'm interested in saving us all some time.
No. Allow me to ask the question.
If I could, let me finish, sir, and then I promise I'll let you. I am just not going to go down this road. I'm not going to comment on anything that's in the media. I'm accountable for my actions. I certainly understand that. It's not appropriate for me. So I just want to make, if anybody else wants to go down this, you're fine. You're welcome to ask, which I'm going to give you the same response.
Okay, since I'm welcome to ask, allow me to proceed. Yesterday, The Washington Post, a very well-respected independent newspaper and based in the nation's capital, reported, do you think the Obama administration released this story in order to hurt your chances to become director of national intelligence?
I go back to my previous answer, and boy, we could have sure saved ourselves a lot of time, sir.
I don't believe that asking questions is a waste of time. Thank you.
And I edited the question a little bit there just for the sake of time, because there were seven questions embedded in there. But again, Admiral Rogers declining to talk about reports that senior officials want him out. And we don't know what he meant by I'm accountable for my actions. He did not elaborate in any way. So it's really not clear what he meant by that.
It's got to be a lot deeper, though, the dispute between Rogers and Clapper Carter than, say, how the ISIS cyber war is going. Or could it be that?
I mean, it very well could be that. I mean, what officials have been saying is that there are issues with whether or not they're satisfied with his performance. To the extent there's a dispute, not much of that has really played out in public. One thing that we do know might be a dispute is that Admiral Rogers has publicly stated in Senate testimony as recently as a couple months ago that it's still his professional military judgment that NSA and Cyber Command remain led by the current dual-hatted arrangement where one person is the commander of one organization and the director of the other. Meanwhile, at the same time, we have heard through, again, media leaks that both Clapper and Carter have recommended that it is time to finally separate those two organizations. And that's, basically everyone in DOD and senior leadership positions has said one version or another of this notion that there will come a time to separate them. But Admiral Rogers is in the camp that says that time has not yet come. Apparently, other senior administration officials think the time to do that is before the end of the Obama administration.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. And down closer to earth, You've got an interesting story that thanks to savings that the Pentagon made in IT, it was able to reinvest in something new and hot, which is kind of the nirvana that a lot of agencies are trying to get to these days.
Yeah, and when we're talking about Wi-Fi, which is now up and running in the Pentagon, really for two things. One is to give DOD employees secure access to the department's what they call NipperNet, the internal DOD network, so that they can roam around with laptops, mobile devices throughout the building and continue to get work done instead of having to be tethered with an Ethernet cable to their desks. That's been something that has been sought after in the Pentagon for a long time because, as I note in the notebook, that building is just impenetrable to wireless signals of basically any kind, including cell phone signals. So you couldn't, you know, you can't really even use like a, you know, a mobile hotspot from your cell phone provider.
So you can only make a phone call when, say, if you step out to have a cigarette or something.
You got it. And in the center Pentagon courtyard, basically, is your only option. So out of savings that DOD got from the institution of something else we've talked about before, which is the Joint Service Provider, they came up with about $36 million in savings in just 1 year and plowed that into the installation of this Wi-Fi network, which now covers most of the building, officials say, including all of the E-ring where senior officials work. This Joint Service Provider idea, just to recap, basically takes several different IT organizations that had been kind of doing their own thing within the Pentagon, the main ones being the Army Information Technology Agency and another one called EITSD, which was part of Washington Headquarters Services, and consolidates them all under one shared services organization to be the single IT provider for all of the Pentagon and a bunch of basically satellite locations around the Washington D.C. area. Within about the next year, that organization, the JSP, is going to fully transition to be part of the Defense Information Systems Agency. So officials say at that point there will basically be one common face to industry, one common organization to do all IT contracting for the Pentagon. That should be all up and running by the start of fiscal year 2018.
And we should say that putting Wi-Fi that is working throughout the Pentagon, especially the five rings, is hardly like getting a router from Comcast and plugging it in. You've probably had about hundreds and hundreds of access points, each of one which needs AC power. It's a big engineering effort.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think that's spot on. You need a lot. It was a big project to install all the hardware and to make sure they got the cybersecurity right. I can recall talking to who was then the director of the Information Technology Agency maybe 3 or 4 years ago, Don Adcock at the time. And the thinking then was Wi-Fi was just infeasible in that building because of security concerns and possible leakage of even unclassified data into the public. So they were looking at things like LIDAR, which was this idea that you could transmit data basically in only a line of sight way, in sort of the same way that a fluorescent light beam works, so that it could never leave a given room. That was the thinking at the time, but they've apparently conquered these cybersecurity concerns to the satisfaction of DOD officials.
So no more cone of silence.
That's right.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, as always, thanks for that update.
You got it.
Read Jared's DOD Reporter's Notebook now online at federalnewsradio.com. Cybersecurity and finding ways to improve it have become a way of life, but a perfect solution is elusive because the threats always change. The network itself remains an important focus, though, for cyber efforts. For some of the latest strategies for mitigating network threats, we turn to John Kindervag, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Mr. Kindervag, good to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You have a topic for recent research called Zero Trust Network Threat Mitigation Technologies. Zero Trust Network Threat, what does that word mean?
Well, Zero Trust is a way to think about networks and securing them in a new way that is a new model that's taking a lot of the world, especially in the federal government, by storm. So that the report you're mentioning is all the different threat mitigation technologies you use to build zero trust networks.
And a zero trust network sounds like something you can't trust at all.
Absolutely. Except what we're talking about is trusting the packets and the flows and the interfaces inside the network. You see, the reason we have a lot of data breaches is we have a trust model, sometimes called trust but verify, where we have trusted insiders and untrusted outsiders, and the insiders can do whatever they want, like Snowden or Manning. And so by saying, let's strip trust out of the network and treat each network packet exactly the same and make sure it's doing what it's supposed to do, we can solve a tremendous number of security problems.
It sounds like a technique for getting at the insider threat, which a lot of federal CISOs and so forth say they just have no way of really being effective against.
Absolutely, because ultimately all cybercrime is an inside job. If it's an outsider threat and it comes to the inside of the network, and suddenly just by the fact that it moved to the internal network, it gets all these privileges that it doesn't deserve, it becomes an insider threat. So ultimately all of the hacks and the data breaches that we have are insider threats, and this is what we're trying to solve.
And you use the term deperimeterization as if there's no perimeter, which indicates maybe network topologies, network layouts have changed a lot.
Network layouts need to change. I don't know that they've changed much in the past 20 years, but that's what we're trying to do with Zero Trust. Our network topology is essentially inverts the old model, and we build micro perimeters around specific data types or asset classes to protect them in a very segmented way, versus the old model had a very large single perimeter, and that is completely dead because of cloud services, because of mobility, because of BYOD, because of all the things that have happened in our world.
It's almost like the analog of containerization for mobile devices.
Yeah, it's very similar to that, right? We have to protect the data. The data is really all that matters. And we can use the network to protect the data, but we can't just have a big perimeter around the network anymore. That doesn't work today. It never really worked, but the new types of threats that came out really showed how weak our security controls really were.
Now, you have listed threat mitigation technologies in this new kind of era that number up to 20. Without going into each one individually, in general, what are good technologies for threat mitigation to create a zero trust network?
Well, we want things that have the ability to look at the packet all the way through the packet. For people who aren't very, in this business, it's important to understand there's multiple layers inside of a network packet that different technologies can look at, and we want to see all the stuff that's going on in the network. So getting visibility is really important. There's really three big things that are moving Zero Trust down the line. The first one is the fact that we have next generation firewalls that can serve as what we call segmentation gateways. These are gateways that segment the networks. The next technology is virtual network infrastructure, things that abstract the physical network so that it makes it easier to build these micro perimeters. And finally, new technologies that enable better centralized management and orchestration so that we can be more agile. And then there's a lot of different pieces and parts that we can put into any particular environment to uplift a particular micro segment.
We're speaking with John Kindervag, Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Now, when you have all of these micro perimeters as opposed to one big perimeter, can that be done in a way that doesn't slow the network down?
Oh, absolutely. Because without getting into too much about network design, our networks have just we've added on to them. They've just been organic, and so by that very fact, they're slower than they need to be. This is much more thoughtful based upon how the traffic flows. So we put as few hops, network hops, in there as possible in order to get the highest level of performance. And because we're doing this in smaller segments, there's fewer rules that any packet needs to look at or meet. And so it can be much more elegant and efficient that way as well.
And you mentioned orchestration and tools. A lot of CIOs and CISOs complain about the number of tools they have that all seem to produce their own sets of logs and data to look at. And they complain that there's no unified way of seeing what's going on with only the major alerts or important things they have to know coming through all of this massive data. Can this technique help here?
Well, certainly we're going to give them ways to get better visibility and to do it in a more efficient manner. And in reality, when I design a Zero Trust network, it needs fewer technologies. There's a lot of things that get displaced that you don't need anymore in a Zero Trust network compared to an old-style hierarchical network. And so, yeah, we can eliminate a lot of the noise that they're having to deal with right now. And we're working on research to continue showing how that can be done.
Because federal agencies are under a policy mandate to have continuous monitoring and continuous diagnostics and mitigation of network threats, can Zero Trust model help with those efforts?
That's built into Zero Trust. In fact, in 2008, 2009, when I created Zero Trust, one of the main things that I said is all traffic must be inspected and logged, not just the outside, but the inside as well. That was really the genesis of what in the federal government they call continuous monitoring. But we developed ways and techniques and strategies around doing that, and it's inherent to the Zero Trust model by default.
Now, recently, you got some political support for this model. Tell us about that occasion.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. The Oversight and Governmental Reform Committee, OGR, of the U.S. House of Representatives issued a report on the OPM, Office of Personnel Management, data breach, and their primary recommendation from a technical side was that government agencies should align with the Zero Trust model. And then Representative Chaffetz of Utah actually penned an article, an op-ed on your website, which is how we got connected, encouraging people to do it. And it was clear that he understood the significance of what we've been saying. And so that's led to a lot more interest in the U.S. federal government.
And if a technology shop wants to get started with a Zero Trust network, what's the first thing they need to do?
Well, the first thing that they need to do is probably give me a call, and we'll talk them through the steps. But we talk about starting at the inside and moving out. So you design from the inside out. Instead of thinking about the technologies, you think about what you're trying to protect, data, assets, applications. It's much like how the Secret Service protects the President of the United States. They know who the President is, they know where the President is, and they know who's supposed to have access to the President. Ask yourself those three questions about your data, and you'll find that you can't say the same thing. And so we want to get a handle first on the data that we have or the assets that we're trying to protect, and then we design that the network starting there and moving outward.
John Kindervag is Vice President and Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
You can read more and find this interview posted at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.